SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
June 1st, At the Races, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com, a little difficult to open the show with my usual bon mot, to be honest, for obvious reasons. I'm 60 years old and just old enough to remember 1968. And for those of you that aren't, I'd recommend some reading and some research. As difficult a week, and particularly the last three, 4 days and nights, as I think most of us have experienced. And I'm going to try to do what we've done during the pandemic portion of our travails as a society and focus on our business and our industry and our horseplay and probably the most pleasant diversion in all of our lives the last few months, even under duress, but also not easy, to be chipper. Which is my usual, continence is to be chipper. The good news and the activities over the weekend that were really pleasant, and that started on Friday afternoon, right into the big Saturday, particularly at Santa Anita and at Churchill, the extensive coverage. I mean, the coverage on Fox is it's pretty funny to be able to more or less watch all day long, and you step out of the room and or you go do something and you come back and there it is, and it just it's there all the time, and it really has enhanced the enjoyment of the major ovals returning. And the mother of all major ovals returns on Wednesday when Belmont opens, and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, waiting for the overnights to come out of Elmont, out of the racing office. And it started with that Wednesday card, and each of, and we knew that each of these cards was going to be substantial. I mean, how's that for a description? But it starts off really well on Wednesday with a running of the Bogey, the Grade Three, that really should grab everybody by the lapels. Got Stormy, 55, and Rushing Fall, the headliners, and Zenobia. In here, you got Suge with Passing Out, and you've got a North American debuter for Christophe Clement, Call Me Love, a See the Stars filly that was a Group 2 winner in Italy. Won the Premio Lidia Tessio. This is quite something. Got Stormy has, and Passing Out, the two of them have a slight recency advantage. Certainly Chad can bring horses back, you know, ready to fire, and Rushing Fall, last seen in the First Lady, now five, Bob Edwards, E5, and Peter Brandt's six-year-old, now six-year-old, 55. She comes back, and of course, coincidentally, is a Get Stormy herself, like Got Stormy next to her, but she comes back for her seasonal debut. Zenobia making the seasonal debut, had won the Athena on the course last year. She's also six for George Strawbridge. So the first of the daily stakes that we're going to be treated to at Belmont Park on Wednesday, the Grade 3 Bogey. Tremendous. And lots of big full fields, and it's going to be just as, you know, just as challenging here as it's been at Churchill. And if you looked at the Laurel cards these first 3 days, Laurel runs today, by the way, but Laurel, you know, so thankful to get going. We talked to Tim Keefe last week when the word came from Annapolis they were going to get started. They got a card today. I mean, virtually every race is overflow. Every single race. I think there's one race. The second drew 11, so just one short of being the entire card filling up. And in fact, since Laurel came up, Laurel starts the action today at 12:40. Tampa today, 12:50. Lone Star runs 2:35. These are all Eastern time. Mountaineer, who got underway yesterday evening, and they did close to $3 million in business last night. And then Assiniboia at 8:30 tonight. So five North American ovals on this Monday, and there's going to be more. There's going to be Indiana running on Mondays, and more Canterbury and so forth. So the early part of the week is no longer going to be ignored, or, you know, meagerly offering betting opportunities. A lot of news to dig through, including some things that happened Friday after we wrapped up, and that includes another point scoring race added to the Derby Trail, the Ohio Derby, June 27th at Thistledown. 20 points, 28-4-2 for the Ohio Derby, June 27th. So slide that right in a week after the Belmont. Things continue to firm up on that front, on the point scoring races. And, of course, we mentioned, right, when the news came, I think it was it Thursday, when the Del Mar stake schedule got locked in August 1st for the shared belief. Yeah, if you hadn't seen that. There was also the good news that the Oklahoma training track at Saratoga is now set to open next week. Horses will hit the backstretch. Things will come alive across the street from the big track, and that should lift spirits. Anybody that around here anyway that has been, you know, a little downcast and uncertain about what kind of a summer we're going to have here, having the horses arrive, that'll get the juices flowing, right? A couple of retirements we got to talk about. Maybe reach out to Catherine Day Phillips and Louis Carvajal, because Mr. Haverkamp and Imperial Hint, the word coming, both retired. And, you know, you heard from both. I mean, many times, especially with the Louis Carvajal and, you know, the proximity. And I should pull up the PPs of Imperial Hint. We saw him a lot. I'm going to be curious. But it just seemed like we got to watch and then congratulate Mr. Mamone and Louie quite a bit with Imperial Hint, and one of those classic little-ish sprinters that you find irresistible, and came back from a variety of dents in the fender, and really an outstanding career. And it's going to be tough, undoubtedly. It's tough whenever, even if you're a Hall of Fame trainer with, with dozens, literally dozens of the kind of horses that any of the Hall of Famers will have. But, when you're somebody that's got, a handful of horses, a dozen, 15, 20, a horse like this comes along and you craft him into a Grade One winner. It'll be hard to come into the barn and him not be there. Very, very, very difficult. And in fact, I'm just looking down. Here's a quote from Carvajal. It's going to be hard. Florida bred, and he just 7 graded stake wins, and the 2 Vanderbilts, and then the Vosburgh downstate. I mean, that's a serious resume when you're winning, when you're winning multiple Vanderbilts, you're defending titles. He won that, 2 years in a row, the effort in the Vosburgh. Track record, a track record that had been around for, a long time. And we got to get Louis or Mr. Mamone, and for Ray Mamone, who, been around the game a good long while. I mean, this was really fun. He wasn't there last year. He couldn't be there last year. But in 2018, when Mamone and his family were all on hand, that was pretty cool. And then Mr. Haverkamp, Catherine Day Phillips, for the Fitzhenrys, and won his share. Another Saratoga success, right? Had come down and won at Saratoga. It's a pelvic injury, but full recovery expected. So a couple of notable retirements of major stake winners, but Imperial Hint. I don't have the PPs in front of me. I'll pull them up, but let me see what he said. Does the story doesn't say how much? Doesn't say how much he won. Well, that shouldn't be $2.2 million at birth. $2.2 million. that's a lot of cake. OBS. Things are underway yesterday, and had talked to Tom Ventura on Friday night, and kind of getting the lay of the Brisho land. They're going to go through the 6th, through Saturday. And so day 2, and they started at about, 7:30 was the first breezer this morning. And yesterday, a couple of the quarter mile breezes under 21, and a quality road colt and a blame colt that zipped. And then when it came to going just a furlong, there was one sub 10 second breeze of 9-4, which was an Into Mischief New York bred filly, hip 1240. So we'll keep an eye on the breeze shows, and maybe get a consigner or two as the week goes on, and they get ready for next week's OBS sale. Goes from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. About 1,300 hips, as we look to see these two-year-olds get distributed. Around the country. Let's go around the country and talk a little bit about the weekend and some of the performances. We're going to give you an idea. We'll talk to Neil Pessin after the first break. And for Neil, boy, getting back to Churchill and getting back on the dirt, that was a tonic, undoubtedly, for Bell's the one. And she was the bell ringer in that winning colors. You know, the two graded stakes at Churchill, and we'll get to the stakes in California. But, you know, Bell's the one. Interesting, she's an interesting filly. And this was, I think, a career best, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure she, 98 buyer. I'm pretty sure it's a, here we go. I'm pretty sure it was a career best for her. Yeah, easily. And I mean, she just blew past break even, and you know, they went fast enough. There wasn't crazy, insane splits. 21-1, 44-2. But she was really flying and drew off by three under Corey Lannery and paid terrific. Mia Mischief and I, we had a very nice afternoon at Churchill on Saturday, and thanks to everybody for the very kind words and congratulations to everybody that came along. But this one... This one, I'd like to have this back. No, I tried to single Mia Mischief, and I just thought she would sit a perfect stalking trip off of break even. And by all rights, that's the way it looked like it was unfolding, but she was not good. Mia Mischief really, I mean, had very little to offer. And meekly... You know, just ended up holding on for third. And, you know, break even, Rosario tried to hold her together, but, I mean, Bell's the one came storming. And then on the other end, I haven't reached out. We'll see about Graham. You know, he was with us last week, so sometimes, you know, you change it up and maybe do something different. But Secret Message, I could say we just got particularly fortunate. I mean, you know, this was a finish that any of, I don't know, 5-6 horses could have won that mint julep. But John Velasquez, and by the way, Johnny, he's coming home to New York, but Jesus. John Velasquez riding really well and wins with Secret Message. And as sort of anticipated in discussion, it just looked like she would get lost on the board when you had horses like, you know, Juliet Foxtrot and Beau Recall and... Nay Lady Nay, and you know, it just felt like Zafel was a talking filly. It just, you know, and that's the beauty. You get a 14 horse field, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be some market movers, for no other term, and she just got to somehow slip through the cracks, You feel good when, you know, when you find one like that. And capped just an amazing sequence. And, you know, as great as it was in that price, Whimsical Muse was the other one. That was great with Amos getting back to the turf, like we talked. But the key to the whole sequence was Red Dog. Gary Hartledge and Joe Johnson. What a country was the key to the whole thing. because even though he only was 17-1, the other two were 25-1, I thought he was the tough horse to find. Let's take a break. Neil Pessin will start us off. That'll lift everybody's spirits. At the Races, back after this.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm singing Mary. Oh, Mary, don't you weep. Martha, don't have to mourn.
Oh, Martha, don't you mourn.
Listen to me, Mary.
Oh, Mary, don't you weep.
Martha, don't have to mourn.
Oh, Martha, don't you mourn.
Pharaoh's army.
Oh, Mary,
they got drowned in the sea
drowned
one day. But Jesus said, Mary,
oh, Mary, don't you weep.
Your little sister don't have to mourn,
oh,
no more.
Martha, don't you mourn.
Now can I get a witness? He said, Mary,
oh, Mary, don't you weep.
Martha don't have to mourn.
Oh, Martha, don't you mourn.
It may be somebody
oh,
sick
oh,
today.
Mary,
if somebody here ain't got no home.
Oh, Martha, don't you
but listen,
mourn.
Pharaoh's army.
Oh,
they got drowned in the sea one day. But I believe a man said, me,
oh, baby, don't you weep.
Your little sister don't have to mourn no
oh,
more.
Mourn.
Now listen, if I could right now,
I
want to tell you that I surely would now.
Oh,
put my foot on the rock, children. Stand on the rock where Moses stood one day. Because Pharaoh's eye. That's what the Bible said, got drowned in the sea.
Drowned in
one
the
day. But I believe the man said, Mary.
Oh, Mary, don't you weep.
He said, Mary.
Oh, Mary, don't you weep.
He said, Mary.
Oh, Mary, don't you weep.
Trouble in the land will be all over after a while.
Mary, don't you weep.
You won't have to give up right for wrong no more.
Mary, don't you weep.
And maybe it could have been a little hard to hear. And I believe Jesus said I better call a little bit louder.
Mary, don't you weep.
Wish I had somebody to help me call me.
Oh, Mary, don't you
yeah, Mary.
Oh, Mary, don't you
yeah, yeah, Mary.
Oh, Mary.
I'll be your bridge over deep water if you trust in my name.
Oh, Mary.
I'll be your rock in the weary land. Tell Martha don't have to mourn no more.
There you go, and we're gonna give you some music that hopefully soothes the soul a little bit. And if you don't know the Soul Stirrers, the inspiration for Neil Simon and Art Garfunkel, you might have picked up a line in there that ultimately got turned into Bridge Over Troubled Waters. And Neil Pessin standing by, and Neil, the bell ringer with Bells the One on Saturday, got her back at Churchill and back on the dirt. And that's the way to get going early in a meet. Neil, congratulations.
Thank you very much. My mare ran a big race.
You know, she's funny. I didn't think the pace was like a giant setup. I mean, it was solid, and it's kind of pace you would like to see if you got a closer. But talk about the winter. She really, after the La Brea, I mean, she only had a little break after Keeneland, the La Brea. Then you were down in New Orleans. You gave her that turf try. Talk about the 3-4 transition.
Well, the La Brea, she kind of got moved a little too early, moved on the backside, coming around the turn wide, which is the move I hate the absolute most, wide around the turn. So you lose momentum and distance with all that. And she went from next to last to third and then just kind of flattened out in the La Brea. Plus with the shipping and everything. And then there really wasn't a lot of spots to run her. I could have taken her to Hot Springs, which I really didn't want to do, or just stay at the fairgrounds and try her on the turf. She'd won on the turf down there the year before, but it was going a mile and not against, it was a stakes race, but it wasn't a really top stake race. And in the 5.5 sprint down there, she just kind of spun her wheels and was stumbling and not really handling it at all. And Corey just wrapped up on her for the most part just to protect her. And so then we had the 3-month break, mainly because of the coronavirus. We'd planned on running her in the Madison at Keeneland. And, of course, that meet got canceled, so we just set up for this race here. And I kept calling Ben, asking him when it was going to be so I could make a plan. And she showed up and ran a big race.
Absolutely. And, you know, for her to crush like that, and, it is notable that in several of her wins, she's blasted races apart and won by open lengths.
Yeah, well, she's a quality filly. I mean, she's never really got, as you can tell by the odds she pays all the time, she's never really gotten the respect that I think she deserves. I mean, she's won 6 out of 12. She's a grade 2 winner, multiple graded placed. And they just kind of disregard her. Like, no one was really mentioning her Saturday as a chance of winning the race.
And she's also, it should be noted, I mean, she's won at Arlington, Keeneland, Fairgrounds, and Churchill. One of five different racetracks.
And Poly Dirt and Turf, short and long.
That's true. She won. That's right. That she won. She won. Yeah.
But other than that, she really hadn't done anything.
Go ahead.
other than that,
exactly.
I'm happy that she showed up in this race because maybe now she'll get the respect that she deserves. Because I think she's one of the better sprint fillies around. So now I might get proved wrong in the next start, but.
Well, and I think if you start using figures as a measurement stick, I mean, up to a 98 buyer now, career best by a fairly significant margin by 5 points, and even looking at her on Thoroughgraphs, I mean that's got to get her close to a zero, and as a 4-year-old, I mean, how much maturity, how much growing has she done since the fall of last year to the spring of this year, physically?
Physically, just a little bit. Not as much as you would think. Just a little, but mentally, she's gotten better. I mean, she's still a little high-strung and whatnot, but like in the paddock Saturday, she was very well-behaved. Sometimes when we go to put the undergirth on her, she'll try and rear up or flip over almost on you, and this time she just stood like a perfect angel that she is. So I think
she was 155,000.
Yep, 155 purchased from Burton Jones at Fazek Tipton.
That came in the July sale as a yearling, and for Bob Lothenbach, and we've talked, whether I'm talking to you or to Ian Wilkes, very nice, now that he's retired, I'm sure he wants to win a lot more like this.
Yeah, well, he's retired from the one company. I'm not sure he's retired because he's always doing
something. Okay. He's
I'm not sure what. Well, I don't get into all that, but I tell you what, he's been, you can't say enough niceness about Mr. Lothenbach. He's an owner that is happy when he wins, and he's not pissed off and mad at you when you get beat. He takes bad news and good news all the same. And as you know, in this business, there's a lot of bad news more than good news.
No doubt.
He's put his money up. He doesn't mind spending money. And hopefully we'll get him. You know, our main goals are trying to get to the Breeders' Cup and the Derby are the two places he wants to go. So hopefully we got something that'll get us to the Derby next year, and hopefully we get to the Breeders' Cup this year.
Well, and it's interesting because some owners, Neil, if that's their objective, like you think about somebody like a Gary West, who buys nothing but route going colts, and that's his focus. He wants classic horses. And what's interesting about Bob Lothenbach is that he's got horses in a myriad of divisions. He's not there's not a sole focus, and so to get a filly like this, that's now a multiple graded stake winner, and the key would be, I suppose, or you mentioned the Madison, a grade one, a grade one maybe in the Ballerina at Saratoga, that you get that stripe, and you've really put some value into a horse like this. She's by Majestic Perfection, and out of the Street Crime Mare, Street Mate.
Right. I was talking to John Bridgemahan this morning here at Churchill, and he said Majestic Perfection may have been the best sprinter he ever rode, ability-wise. And he rode Kodiak Cowboy, and who was champion sprinter, but he said Majestic Perfection may have been the best sprinter he ever rode. So, and, when we go to the sale with Mr. Losenbach, his main thing is to try and get value for what you think the horse is worth. We don't look at, oh, well, this horse is going to the Derby or this horse is going to the Oaks. We just look, try and get the best athletes that we can for the money that we want to spend for them.
So, Neil Pessin is with us. We're talking. Yeah. My fault, Neil. We've got a delay on the line, so it makes it tricky. Yeah, the distance wise, because one of the things that came up the other day with handicapping, we were talking either with Marty or with Nick Tamaro about the 7/8 versus the 3/4, and maybe her winning at 6, that in some ways was even a even another positive sign, because the assumption going into this was that she's likes the extended sprint, the 7/8.
Well, I think 7/8 is probably her best distance, but it all depends on how the race is set up. If they run 7/8 and they go the first quarter in 24, it's going to be hard for her to close. But if they go 3/4 and the other day went 21 and change, it makes it a little easy. Even though those fillies are supposed to go 21 and change. Because those were some, the break even is fast, and that's what she wants to do. She wants to go. So you can't try and rate her. So it's not unusual for her to go 21 and change, but, the 7/8, if they go 21 and change, 22 flat, it gives my filly a chance. If they go 23/4, it makes it tough to catch the leaders. So it's kind of how the race sets up. But if it sets up equally, 7/8 is a better distance for my filly because she can just sit and wait a little longer and still make that same move.
Well, and she does, even though Corey Lannery has been riding her on a regular basis, she's run for, everybody that Florent Giroux won with her and Roman won with her. And so there's so much to like about her. And, you mentioned some of the goals. What do you think? Do we know when is Keeneland going to announce which of those spring stakes they may run at in July?
Well, but before you get to that, you're saying that any jock can ride her and any track and any server. You're trying to say anyone can train her too?
Never, never. This is a Neil Pessin specialty.
Well, actually, I think anyone could train her. She makes me look good. But right now the goals are we'll go to the Madison, which is going to be July the 11th, Bluegrass Day.
Okay.
England,
good.
Which will be 7/8 grade one. Then we'll come back to Churchill on Oaks or Derby Day. I think it's going to be Derby Day, but I'm not sure yet. For the Humana Distaff, which is also 7/8 grade one. And if she does well in either one of those, then we'll consider going to Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup the first week of November, which I think that race will also be 7/8.
Yes. Yes.
So we don't have to leave the state. We can stay right here where we're at and run in all three races.
Well, and you also have the luxury, I mean, more than a luxury, the fact that Keeneland is hosting the Breeders' Cup, that has to have you salivating. I mean, given the fact that she's got the two wins at Keeneland, in both the Raven Run and that allowance, her second start, and when she was working on being undefeated, that string of four wins. I mean, the only beat at Keeneland was when you tried to go long in the Ashland, and that was pretty much the last time she went two turns. You did run in the Acorn. In fact, I watched that race with you last year at Belmont. But other than that, she's going to come back to Churchill, and so she's got she's got a win and 2 seconds and 3 tries. I don't blame you for carving out that schedule.
Yeah, well, and salivating I wouldn't say, because that's reserved for like Brightson's in New Orleans when I go out to eat.
Nah.
Then I salivate. But, yeah, it's exciting because, you know, she likes both. I mean, she's won graded stakes now at both tracks, Churchill and Kingland. So, and to not have to go anywhere to ship, you know, I'll ship from Churchill over to Kingland on race day for the Madison. And then I'll be right here, stable at Churchill for the Humana Distaff. And then I'm sure we'll have to be over at Kingland a few days before for the Breeders' Cup. So if everything, that's of course, if everything goes perfect and I don't screw anything up between now and then.
We're not worried about that. We are worried about where you're eating. You mentioned Brightson's, and this has got to be murder for you to have. I guess you can get some takeout, but you're a fresser like few others. What have you been doing for eats?
It's not good. It's not good. I thought I was in purgatory in New Orleans. All my restaurants were there, but they weren't open, so I couldn't bet on anything, and I couldn't eat. It wasn't good, and it's pretty much the same here. So we're just doing quick takeouts right now. A couple of places are starting to open for takeout, but, I mean, it's still not like going in, sitting down, and having it served hot right in front of you.
Well, as we've kidded for a while, you know, Neil is one of the go-to restaurateur experts, and you know, one of those people that is just knows about the newest and the most hidden, and just got his finger on the pulse in all the towns that you know that he visits, and you know, when you get to spend winters in New Orleans, you can't really go too wrong. Neil, talk a little bit about you know, the way things are being managed right now, and you know, racing somehow has gotten through this situation better than a lot of entities.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm just happy to be back up and running in any fashion, but eventually and hopefully we are going to get the fans back, because one, it's better for the racetracks themselves, just on the bottom line, especially like for Churchill, for Derby and Oaks. I mean, that would be a murder on the bottom line for them. But it's just, you know, you go over in the stands and there's, you know, 15 people over there at Churchill Downs, which holds 150,000. And it's kind of eerie. And it's, you know, like, I got very excited when Bell won the other day. But overall, just watching races, there's no excitement to it. The owners aren't even allowed to come out right now, which I think they're trying to work on that, where at least one owner can come. He just can't go to the paddock, but he'll be able to come maybe. So, you know, I'm happy that we're running, and it's working out right now because Churchill is one of the only games in town, so the handle's big. But when everybody gets back online, you know, as much as it's a sport of kings, you still have to look at it partially from a financial level for everybody. You know, our purses have been cut slightly, but we're just happy to be running for anything, really. But the tracks still have to make money, too. And I know a lot of horsemen don't abide by that. They think the tracks all good. Don't worry about them. But they still got to look at their bottom line, because they have stockholders and shareholders to answer to. So, eventually we have to get fans back in the stands. And I know this thing's been bad, but I don't know if it warrants all that we've been through, because it's destroyed a lot of lives and a lot of incomes. And so hopefully it's worth it, and hopefully we come out on the other end of it. But I don't think horse racing can continue on this line for an extended period of time. I think eventually we have to get people back. And it just generates the interest overall of getting new owners in the game. You know, what person wants to get in the horse racing right now so they can watch it on TV? If they can't go see their horse, feed their horse a mint, go to the paddock, that's the excitement of owning a racehorse. It's not sitting at your house and watching it on cable TV.
No, fair point. And it, You know, we know that, yes, there's people that, you know, particularly over the last couple of months that may have wandered in, and, you know, the ADW companies have reported, you know, a lot of new signups. But it, you know, it's also the same argument, Neil, about, you know, those that say, oh, we don't need the small tracks and we don't need the, you know, the sea level tracks, except that it's a problem if you don't have venues for people to be taken to the races. If cities like Boston don't have a racetrack that's convenient, you're not going to have the, you know, the hook. I mean, you bring people. Anytime I've brought anyone to the racetrack for the first time, the spectacle invariably ensnares them. I mean, I would say three quarters of the people I've introduced the game to have, you know, come back to it in either casually or, you know, seriously. And so, you know, having that, you know, that live spectacle counts for a lot. And as we've tried to explain, people seeing nickel claimers their first day at the racetrack, they don't know the difference between a nickel claimer and a Derby winner. They're seeing horses, you know, coming down the stretch and striving for the wire, and it's exciting if they're just being introduced.
It is, and a lot of those new people that have signed up, they had nothing else to sign up for. There was nothing else for them to bet on. A gambler wants to gamble. So when all the other sports get back online, well, we retain those. And with the smaller racetracks, we still need an outlet for the horses that can't compete at Churchill Downs. I mean, this is a tough meet right now, and New York's going to be a tough meet. But you have to have an outlet for the cheaper horses to go make a living and have a career. If that goes away, then you're going to see the business start to diminish also.
Yeah, I can't argue at all. But it, you know, it's very, very slowly. It's funny. I think the first venue we've read about that and have heard about that is going to allow patrons, Prairie Meadows, and there was an uncertainty as to whether they were even going to have a meet 2 weeks ago, and it ends up that not only are they going to start up, but it'll be you know, open to patrons. So it feels like, you know, we're inching in the right direction.
Oh, I think so too. And the horse business has survived a lot of things over the years. So, and I'm pretty sure we'll get through this one too, but I'm just looking forward to when we're on the other side and we got fans back in the stands and that excitement and, you know, you can go get a hot dog at the stands.
Neil, speaking of the business side, are you or clients going to OBS? Are you catching, you know, going through the catalog? Talk a little bit about stock acquisition, and, you know, earlier you mentioned, you know, some 2-year-olds that might be on the way with the Lothenbach team, but how's that side of things?
Well, right now we're really not doing a whole lot. We usually don't do a lot of OBS this time of the year. We start basically at the September yearling sale at Kingland, but we may start, if Fazek Tipton has their earlier sale in July, we'll start with those yearlings first. And we've bought some 2-year-olds in the past, but it's usually not what we do. We usually just buy yearlings, and he breeds. He's got a bunch of mares that he breeds also. So we've got, I think, around 36 or 40 2-year-olds. You know, between Ian Wilkes and Chris Block and myself and Joel Byrne up at Canterbury, we'll have, I think it's roughly 36 or 40 2-year-olds to bring in between us. And half of them we bought, and half of them are homebred.
That's encouraging. To know that you've got, and how many in the barn right now total?
Well, I've got 14 stalls at Churchill, so I have 14 horses, and I have 17 waiting to come in that are in Ocala right now. So we're swapping a few around today. We'll send a few to Canterbury, up to Joel Burnt, and I'll bring some of the ones in from Ocala. But I'll maintain 14 here at Churchill until I can get a couple more stalls.
How about that? And stalls at a premium, I'm sure, for when it came down to it, with the demand, especially, you know, given how many, you know, how many venues weren't taking horses in when, you know, when the decisions had to be made.
Well, there were, I'm sure he had his highest number of stall applications ever for here. And I feel fortunate that I got stalls on the grounds and in a good barn, and I got the 14, because a lot of people got shut out. People that had been here before, because there's a lot of new people. You know, Chad Brown came with a barn. You know, you can't turn him down. He's going to be running quality horses all the time and shipping them in and out. Pletcher's here with a few. A bunch of California guys came, I think, mainly because of the workman's comp. A few New York guys came because of the labor board. You know, so plus there was no place running, plus this had the highest purses of any place. So everyone was kind of congregating here. And you had all the horses in New Orleans, Oaklawn, and Florida all waiting to come.
Yeah.
So this year, I think, was probably the toughest year ever as far as getting stalls at Churchill. I felt a lot of sympathy for Ben, because I'm sure he had many, many phone calls.
And Steve, right, is the stall manager.
Steve Hargrave is the stall manager, and Ben Huffman is the racing secretary.
And also,
what they had to do to get us in here. I mean, we had to make appointments on the vans. You know, they had to give people certain time slots because of having to test everybody, and they made us test in New Orleans because that's one of their tracks. So right before we left, we all got the test down there. Grooms, hot walkers, exercise riders, trainers, whoever was coming on Churchill grounds had to be tested. And then if they were coming from Florida or Hot Springs or any other track, they, when they pulled in the gate, there was a facility that they went and got tested right away before they could come onto the backside. So for that, and for the new van entrance and the space they had, they were only allowing three vans an hour to come in. So over a 12-hour period each day. So you had 36 vans a day coming in, but you had to give people time slots to be in those time frame so it didn't get all backed up, and the horses weren't sitting out on the vans for 2 hours. So I give a lot of kudos to Churchill, to Ben, and to Steve for arranging all that and setting it all out and getting it done, because I know that's one headache I would not want to have done.
Enough headaches, just, you know, taking care of your people and having to shelter the way, sheltering the way you did in New Orleans for, you know, all that extra time. And it's put a, you know, it put a strain undoubtedly on everybody. I mean, everywhere you turn. And, you know, I've said repeatedly, I mean, it just feels like, you know, the industry as a whole, Neil, has really taken this in remarkable stride. I mean, that's one thing that everybody can feel good about, working with each other you know, that part of it has been remarkably smooth. I mean, despite all the challenges.
It really has been unbelievable if you think about it, with all the working parts that go on just to run a race meet and then to run under these circumstances. But like I say, as horsemen, we're just happy to be running. And you know, the purses are lower than last year, but they're still very good purses here. So, you know, I think a maiden race is, what, 79,000. If you just said that 5 years ago, we'd have been ecstatic. Like, 79,000, really? So
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So Churchill got us used to the, you know, last meet it was 95,000 for a maiden race. But with no simulcasting and no income, of course, we had to cut. But it's still a great purse to run for, and an owner can still make money doing this, which I don't want to get into that part of it, because I'd get a lot of owners out of the business if they really looked at their bottom line. It's very hard to make money in this business, but but with the purses here, you can still get out ahead of the game a little bit.
Well, certainly out ahead of it here with Bell's the One, Neil Passan, just a great way to get the middle part of the campaign rolling, moves back over to the dirt, and wins and wins well, and the winning colors, and it looks like a very clear path toward Keeneland and the Breeders' Cup. Neil, as always, just delighted for you and Mr. Lothenbeck and Corey, and continued success.
Thank you. As long as I don't screw it up, we'll be okay.
Neil Pessin, everybody, and Bob Lothenbach's Bells the One with a big blowout win. Nice effort in there. And the money, just under even money for Me and Mischief, and break even was just under 5-2. Spice Perfection, I guess based on her, on previous experience and success, she ended up as third choice. And then Princess Causeway, and I thought Princess Causeway was an interesting price, but the fact that she goes off at a couple bucks less than Bells the One is a surprise. So the Bells the One supporters absolutely were rewarded here, 28-20. Break even ran well. I mean, she had every reason to get caught by anybody else that might have been closing, and Me and Mischief just kind of never really threatened. She just sort of was chasing, and was a meek third in here. But happy as always. Neil, one of the most liked horsemen out there, and the New Orleans Louisville circuit, and he's proven for years when he got a good horse, whenever he gets a good horse, he knows exactly what to do. We're going to start to look toward the top of the hour, and Joe Bianca is going to join us from TDN, my man Joe, and known Joey, oh my God, met Joe, it's got to be, I'm going to have to ask him actually. And he's been on a couple of times, but I think it'd be valuable. I'm going to reach out to Joe when he's available. He's been doing he's kind of anchoring the show that TDN has been doing weekly. And, they kind of pick a theme from each week and expand on it. With Bill Finley and Brian DiDonato and then a guest, and it's kind of a round table if you haven't seen it. And Joe's got a very acute intellect, very smart and interesting, and he loves the game. I mean, I when I met him, he was, I think I couldn't have been, it might have been a teenager, actually. It might have been like 19. And he came up, we met on the old ESPN message board. I mean, that's how long I've known Joe. I mean, when did that disappear? Remember we used to have the Sitco pick six? That was great. The Sitco, right? The Sitco contest. And then Joe came and worked. He worked with us with the barbecue too for a while. Joe Bianca is gonna join us. Abel Cedillo, by the way, later today, and after we talked about so much about him on Friday, going into the weekend, all he did was sweep the two stakes, and to say the least. Abel Cedillo is, a rising entity on everybody's radar screen. It's not, you can't deny at this point, after sweeping both of the Honeymoon and the Santa Maria yesterday. Santa Maria yesterday, that Fighting Mad, it just basically started, loping along, and it just shows you. I mean, the assumption was, I think, that that CC would be able to dictate and you know, Hard Not to Love was going to, you know, have to, you know, have to make a kind of a late run, and that's what she did. But CC, I don't know if Espinoza, you know, just kind of sat a little bit. I mean, she didn't break great, and I guess Espinoza just thought that at any point, you know, she would be able to reel in Fighting Mad. But you could see right away on the turn and at the top of the stretch that Fighting Mad was just on cruise. I mean, 23-1, 46-2. Forget it. That was way too easy. 110 for the three quarters, and then she actually started to draw off. And you know, Cedillo, you know, after the four wins the other day, he's just showing all different kinds of, you know, of ability. Different kinds of horses, the turf, the Honeymoon on Saturday. Congratulations to Gary Barber. Constitution Philly just, you know, sat comfortably. Another situation where, you know, kind of a even splits. Parker was, you know, was setting fractions, and Laura's Light just sat back and, you know, then took over and had to hold off a couple of late chargers. But the grade three. So Abel Cedillo in the third hour this morning. And just hearing from Graham Motion. Graham's going to join us, I think. Well, we'll see. Late morning. Yes. All right. Let me. And Graham. Graham wanted to find out if anybody. We'll let him sound off on it. Crystal Cliffs that won last week, and he did. Graham, got to give Graham credit. He gave out, right? He gave out Crystal Cliffs. We'll talk to him as well. All right. We're going to take a music break and come back. Joey Bianca is going to join us after this.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the